John Heggie, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing wonderful, John. It's nice to see you.
Tell me a little bit more about all that you do.
Well, we do estate planning in our firm, and we help people both avoid probate and avoid estate taxes. Two good things to avoid.
Yeah, really. Important stuff. I just, as we talk about it, and we set this up every time, but I think it's important to do so, there's a lot of people that haven't thought about their estate plans, haven't done anything with them. There's some people that have written wills, which is better than nothing, of course. And then I'd say the vast majority of people maybe think about a trust, and then maybe they go, well, that's a little expensive to put together. I don't want to do that, without realizing how much financial burden they are now shifting to their kids who are going to have to deal with probate. Did everything I say there make sense?
It absolutely did. And, you know, I'm certainly guilty of really hammering people to do the trust. It's by far the best tool that you can create. But I was actually headed down to the county building to file some deeds the other day with my new intern, my soon to be graduated from high school 18-year-old son.
And oh, he's the intern.
Well, he doesn't listen to me, so he I guess he's the boss. I'm the intern.
So I have that to look forward to. Okay.
Yeah,
you keep going.
Sure. So riding on the train coming down, and I just overhear two people talking, and this guy, you know, and he's going to his job. He's a gainfully employed person. You think he's got, you know, everything going on. And he says to his buddy that he mentions he doesn't have a will because everything's just going to automatically go to his wife. And so he didn't think he needed one. No, I mean, I didn't engage with the guy or anything like that, but it really floored me. Like, I forget. People accept the trust issue aside, which everyone should do. I mean, absolutely. But there's people who don't even bother to have a will. And really bad stuff can happen if that's the case.
I can't believe you didn't engage. That's like your moment to be the superhero on the train. Well, that's like they had the Batman light in the sky. That's
right.
That was your moment. But I get it. You're on the train in public, and you never know how people are going to react when you walk up to them. And also then you'd have to admit that you were eavesdropping on their conversation.
Yeah, that's true.
That's always hard to do. So wait, your spouse doesn't automatically get everything? Why not? That seems to be the most... I would have thought that too.
Right. I think probably a lot of people do. There's two kinds of probate. And remember, probate is the legal proceedings where a deceased person's assets are converted over to either a living person or some sort of entity, like a trust. But there's two kinds. There's the kind where you have a will, and that's called testate probate. And there's the kind where you don't have a will, and that's called intestate probate. Those are really old terms. There's not going to be any kind of test on that.
I sure hope not, because I'm already forgotten.
But, intestate is not something you generally want, because the judge will apply the laws of intestacy, because, you know, if that term comes up a lot. And one of the things that happens is, in your case, if you're married and you have a kid and you pass away, only half your stuff goes to your spouse. The other half goes to the child share, and that's split up amongst the number of kids that you have. So, and that obviously gets super complicated when we're talking about minors. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, people have a child from a prior marriage or a previous relationship. And, you know, that's where things happen, where you read about or hear about of, you know, little old ladies getting thrown out of their house.
Well, now, oh my gosh. So, yeah, because let's say... Beyond that, even beyond your kids, let's say you're in your 60s right now and you're listening to this, mm-hmm. and you've been blessed with not only kids but grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of your kids have passed away, but they have their kids still alive, which happens, of course, unfortunately.
Yes, unfortunately.
So now we're in a complicated situation where your wife gets half, the kids get half. If one of your kids has passed away, their heirs are now inheriting part of that half.
That's correct.
And now we're in a whole rigmarole.
Right. And, you know, most people's intention are probably what this gentleman on the train was saying to his buddy. Their intention is to give everything to their spouse and their spouse to use it as much as they need during their lifetime. And then when they're gone, then pass it along to the kids or, the kids share to the grandkids, that kind of stuff. So it's just not what most people want to do. But that's what's going to happen if you don't bother to just get a very basic, simple will that says, I give everything to my spouse. And then that solves 99% of all the problems.
Of those problems.
Of those problems.
Specific
right.
problems,
yeah. Not all problems.
So, yes, will is not the gold standard, but it is a standard at least. And
right.
the problem with wills, though, not, again, that's better than nothing.
Yes.
And it's good to have that, especially you want your spouse to get everything, is that they are Polaroids. They're snapshots. They're brief looks at things. So you might have written a will saying my spouse gets everything, and it turns out when you pass away 30 years later, maybe your spouse has predeceased you. And now that will is makes a lot less sense than it did.
Right.
Maybe you have a will that says I'm going to split this evenly among three kids, and in the meantime, one of those kids isn't able to accept that money anymore for whatever reason, or you don't want them to anymore. Wills are just moments in time, right?
Yeah, and generally a will isn't going to be nearly as descriptive as a trust, where you're going to say if this happens, do this; if that happens, do this. You know, you'll have a lot of the contingencies covered. So, I mean, obviously a trust is better, but a will is a bare minimum that everybody needs, or just all kinds of crazy stuff can happen.
Is that an Illinois thing that it doesn't pass to the spouse, or does each state do it differently? Like, I'm just wondering why this permeates through our thoughts that spouses automatically get everything if we pass.
Well, because I think that's because that's most people's intent.
Right.
And it does happen if you just do something as simple as a will. And a will is not all that difficult to do. And, you know, it's not all that helpful. It's not the most helpful, but it does help get over the bare minimum. And that's how most people spell out their wishes, everything to the spouse. If my spouse isn't there, then to the kids.
All right, we're just getting started here with John Heggie. HeggieLaw.com is where people can go for more information. I know you do free consultations, too, because people have a lot of questions about this stuff. They may have a toadie and beneficiaries on their IRA and think, why do I even need somebody? Well, call 847-272-7360. That's the number
That's
we want
it.
To go
Perfect.
With. 847-272-7360. It's on a tattoo on my right arm. That's how I know that. HeggieLaw.com. Just to start chatting through everything. Everyone should at least have a conversation with someone like John Heggie to maybe look at the blind spots that they don't even know exist in their plan. Or they don't have a plan and they know it. I think that we all run somewhere along that spectrum. And John Heggie from Heggie Law can help out. Stay right there, John. We're not done yet, of course. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Please give us a call if you got a question. Maybe you are either someone that has no plan, or you have a plan that you don't know if it's still up to date. Maybe you're someone that is now acting as a trustee and there's issues, or you're in a situation that's just mind-boggling. John could at least offer some general thoughts on the matter to help you maybe start pointing in the right direction. We'll get to those calls and questions after this on WGN. 222 on WGN. John Hansen here. John Heggie there from Heggie Law. Had a few people text in. We're not trying to make people panic,
no.
But we're worried because they say, hey, I own my house as a joint tenant with my wife. If I die, wouldn't the other spouse get the whole house automatically? And we had another similar question. There are some protections for our spouses when it comes to the house, right?
Right, very much so. So most people, if you purchased your home, like say, let's say in the last 30 years, and you were married when you purchased it, and there were, you know, no partners or anything like that, you know, that you had investment partners or something, you probably own it in something called tenancy by the entirety. And that's a type of ownership that's, you know, fairly unique. It's prevalent in Illinois. It means that both you and your spouse actually already own the house 100%. Now that can't be true. So it's a little bit of a legal fiction, and it very much helps protect you from liability, from being sued. Like if they were to sue one spouse, they could never take the house because the other spouse owned it 100%, and vice versa.
So it's use that 100% number when it. It's convenient to you when you need it.
Yeah, that's the short answer to it.
Yeah, okay.
It's a great thing, but you know, joint tenancy is a little tricky, and you know, you're dealing with some quite arcane. Like we were talking about intestate and testate before, real estate law is even more arcane. So if you have joint tenancy with the right of survivorship, that probably means the opposite of what you think it means. So it's well worth looking up your deed. Find your county's recorder of deeds. If you're in Cook County, it's on a website. It's super advanced. It's easy to do. And you can actually look up your deed. Every piece of property in the United States has a file in a recorder of deeds office, electronic or actual, that shows every single person who's ever owned that piece of property.
And what should we be looking for on the deed?
Well, I would just look for the type of ownership. How do you own this? If it's joint tenants, you know, I would change it to tenancy by the entirety. If that's how you own it, that's a pretty good way to own a home if you're a married couple.
Well, I started this question thinking that we were going to settle everybody's mind. Now I'm worried that I'm now more confused than I was before, because joint tenants sounds so good for when one person right. passes. Wait, what could be the hiccup there then?
Well, you know, there is the ability if the surviving spouse doesn't, you know, is owned in a way where the surviving spouse isn't the automatic new owner, which can happen by various forms of joint tenancy, then we have a problem. We have to go probate that their right to it, or the right of the survivor's share.
So they might still end up with it, but it goes through probate.
Right. And, you know, we were talking about that before. You know, we really, really want to avoid the intestate probate. But, you know, we definitely want to avoid even testate probate. I mean, the judges over here are great, and they're very helpful, but it's expensive. You know, you're going to run, you know, it's probably $5,000 to $10,000 is a pretty good estimate for Cook County. You have to hire a lawyer.
You have to do it.
You have to do it. You cannot appear pro se. It has to be a member of the local bar. You have to do odd things like run an ad in the paper for a certain period of time. And, you know, that seems to be supporting papers nationally based on how much that costs. And, you know, there's a lot to it. And, obviously it takes forever. You know, you're looking at about 14 months in Cook County, and that's a long time if you're waiting for something. So, you know, it's best to avoid probate if we can.
Yeah, you mentioned $5,000 to $10,000. Well, I'm thinking for the vast majority of us, I imagine that is going to be more than what a trust is going to be, most likely.
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, obviously, you can get some complicated trust planning that's going to cost more than that.
Right.
But in general, for most people, the cost of estate planning is less than the cost of probate.
Right. And it may make you feel fine to not pay it now. But it may not feel great to go, well, then my kids are going to have to deal with this.
Yes.
Or my spouse.
Yes. And, you know, that's not a time when people are grieving that they should really be given a lengthy legal challenge.
We have a lot of mechanisms now to move property or assets around, right? We've talked about transfer on death instruments for homes. We talk about beneficiaries on your IRA and your 401ks. And I wonder, well, those are really great tools. Uh-huh. If now a lot of people start to think, well, then what do I need to plan an estate for? If I feel like I've tied everything up and made it very directly clear who it's going to win, what do you say to people that say, I've got a plan, it's beneficiaries and a toady?
So that's not bad. I mean, quite honestly, a toady is an excellent tool. If you can get rid of your main assets, like, you know, most people's main assets are their real estate and their retirement accounts. And if you can give those away via beneficiaries, that's great. And, you know, I would argue a toady is part of estate planning, but if you did it on your own, that's great too. I mean, I hope it's right. I hope you showed it to a lawyer.
Right.
Least. But that's fine. The problem is twofold. One, that really only works when you have very limited assets, like a person is single, they live in a condo. That condo, it would have to be valued probably at over $150,000, which a lot of condos are, to trigger probate. And they have a pretty simple income source, like Social Security and my 401k. If your life is simple and neat like that, that's great to name beneficiaries. Unless your beneficiary passes with you in a common accident or something like that. But it's certainly better than doing nothing.
Okay. But the point is that naming a beneficiary, you may not be as up to date on that as you think you are.
Right. And you probably forgot something. There's a life insurance policy. There's something that you forgot to do. And I'll tell you, I go to probate court for, you know, on behalf of clients all the time over one or two things. It was outstanding that the state legislature raised the minimum probate from $100,000 to $150,000. You'd be surprised the number of people that were landing in like $105,000, $110,000 and having to go to probate. And, you know, we talked about the cost of that earlier. You know, if you leave this earth with $100,000, and you have to go to probate, you're going to give up close to 10% of it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's terrible.
So I'm glad they raised that. That's
good.
Yeah,
it was wonderful.
But still, if you own a home in the burbs the vast majority of us are still going to, thankfully, I mean, that's a good problem to have, end up in probate if you don't have this all buttoned up or if you don't have a trust. 224 says, you talk about couples, if you have kids, it's good to have a will or a trust. What if you never have kids? I know there's a lot of people that listen, and either they're single and they don't have children, sure, or they're married and they didn't have kids.
Yeah, and I don't ever want to come across like we're all the same, like, you right, know, as a cookie cutter approach to any of this. Well, you know, I think if that's your case, if you don't, you think about where do you want your things to go? Do you want them to go to charity? Do you want them to go to a niece or a nephew or your buddy or whatever it may be? Just determine who your beneficiaries are, whether that's your children or not, and then you can set up a plan that makes sure it gets to them without the costs and frankly hassles of probate.
Right. 847-272-7360 is how you reach John Heggie. HeggieLaw.com. I'll give out that information a couple more times before John's done. Our phone number, as we're getting a lot of texts, would love to hear your voices too, 312-981-7200. We'll do a little more time here with John Heggie, so call right now. But now we go to the newsroom for Sylvia Snowden's news at 2:30 on WGN. Yeah, I'm going to scoot right on over there as soon as this show is done and be on the video board about 34 minutes after the show ends. John Heggie, do you trust that I can get over to the United Center on time?
If anybody can do it, it's you, John.
Absolutely. I'll give it my best. Hope we see you at the UC. And if you can't make it today, just two home games left after today, Monday and Wednesday. We'd love to see you all at the United Center before the season ends. All right, Mitchell's got a question for you. John Heggie from Heggie Law does estate planning. Mitchell, you got something a little complicated here for us. You don't have to give us every detail, but do your best to get to the core of what you're asking, my friend.
Okay, counselor, this is my situation. My mom had a trust with the second husband over 35 years. The bottom line is that the trust, as you know, overrides the will in its language,
right,
in the vernacular and the way it's written, number one. Number two, my mom's husband passed away 3 years ago. There's a termination clause of the trust. Now, we're dealing with a blended dynamic, so there's three siblings, and there's another three on the other side. To make things worse, the lawyer will not disclose if the actual trust has been basically dissipated, which by law it should be once the second spouse dies. So we are left lingering because the lawyer is unprofessional, number one. But the bottom line is that no matter how many times I contact him, he delays, and what is the unintended consequences?
Okay,
bar association?
Yeah, my that's a great starter. I just want to make sure I understand. Your mom's spouse passed away. Did your mom also pass away, did you say, Mitchell? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Yeah, my mom passed away in 2020.
Okay.
November 2nd, 2020. He passed away 3 years later.
Oh, okay.
In 2024.
Well, I'm sorry you're dealing with this. This sounds like a messy one, John. I know you can't give specific advice, of course, but if a lawyer isn't getting back to you and things are getting delayed, I don't know. What are your thoughts generally on what you're hearing here?
So I am happy to offer one piece of very specific advice, and that's after you're done listening to the show tonight, on Monday morning, call Peck Ritchie. I heard them advertise on WGN before. They are great at litigation for estates, wills, trusts, the whole nine yards over there. So that's what I would do.
You mean litigating when things go haywire?
Right. When you have an attorney for the trust, in this case, who's not communicating with you and you're a beneficiary, something doesn't smell right. So
yeah.
I would call Peck Ritchie. They can absolutely help you.
Have you heard Peck? He's on with John Williams a lot. He is extraordinary. He literally writes books on this stuff. And it's like when these things go chaotic, he's the guy that steps in. He does elder care stuff as well. Mm-hmm. Do you have a pen or can write down something, Mitchell?
My whole point is that my mom spent a lot of money on a trust, and they just basically changed the goalpost. And it's the most ridiculous thing that you're only forced to do is litigate, because these lawyers, not all of them, but this one in particular, is a coward, and he's a grifter.
Well, don't say his name on here, because then I get a lot of trouble. So I want you to call Peck Ritchie. The website is Peck, P-E-C-K, Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-E-Y, Peck Ritchie, Attorneys at Law. And they do have a number on their website for the free confidential consultation, 312-201-0900. That's 312-201-0900. And Mitchell, if you missed any of that, just stay here on the line. Iridian can make sure you get those numbers too during your next commercial break. And John, that's not what you don't litigate after the fact on a real messy, crazy situation like that usually, right? That's why you're advising him calling Peck.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. We don't do a lot of litigation. They're very well teamed to handle something that like this, and this sounds like it's going to be a handful.
Yeah, I didn't even quite. Did you kind of understand the thread of what's happening there in terms of just like a trust that ends when both people pass, but beneficial? Like, is that a common thing if things aren't buttoned up the right way?
It's not common. That's the beauty of the trust is if as long as it's written by a competent attorney and people are acting in good faith, which people generally do. Then it's not going to create any problem. If it has to be litigated afterwards, you better get somebody good on your side.
Yeah. That's an interesting question for the 847 and kind of a complicated one, I think. My sister, brother, and I, the texter, so three kids, inherited my parents' house. So each of us, we own a third of the house. I want to make sure my children inherit my part of the home when I pass. Does each of us as owners, so I assume they're not selling this house. Do each of us as owners need to do toadies on our percentage, transfer on death instruments, on our percentage of the property to make sure the property doesn't go through probate if one of us passes away? I'm assuming we're all tenants in common. I mean, this has got to be a common thing that happens. People keep the house. Maybe it's a vacation house or they just love this spot to all gather and it was a great place. So they're going to keep it, but then that becomes part of their estate.
It certainly does. And this, these are messy. This is where it goes bad is right where the caller or the texter is talking about is G3. When the third generation comes in, you know, that's everybody wants to use the house on that 4th of July and Memorial Day. So then we got 25 people in it, 2 days, two weekends a year, and it's empty the rest of the time. For sure, the best option there is to set up a trust for that piece of property, naming
individually for the house.
Yeah, for the house itself. It can still be a revocable trust. The three owners can make the be the grantors to make the trust, and then you need to lay out the rules of what it is you want to happen with the next generation.
And you put that in the name of that's the house's name, is the trust.
Right. So it's 123 Main Street. We're going to make a trust called 123 Main Street Trust. And that is going to be the owner of the house. There's going to be three people who own, let's say, a share, one-third share of that trust. And then, what they do with their share is outlined in the trust.
Okay, if your parents have a vacation spot and it is in a trust, they both pass hopefully many, many years from now, and there's three kids. I'm obviously talking about my situation mm-hmm. here. When both people pass, I'm confused on what happened. Is the trust essentially the vehicle in which all the assets get sent out to the heirs, and then that trust is gone at that point, right? And then it's up to all the heirs to have their own trusts, or in the case of a vacation house, set up a trust for that house specifically.
Right. So that trust survives the makers of the trust. It would say the rules of what happens in the trust. And oftentimes that is, when the death of the three owners, we're going to do X, Y, or Z. The trust can continue, but most trusts, grant or revocable trusts, do terminate, relatively soon after a person passes away.
Right, because essentially there's nothing left inside the trust.
Right.
The box is empty.
Give my money here, give my property there, and my, power tools here. And then that happens, the trustee executes that, and then that's it.
Do all three heirs of this house have to agree to create a trust for that house?
Well, they do, and that's really kind of the driver behind this, is we got to get on even footing now for how everyone agrees to do this, if it's going to possibly survive into the future.
So let's say these three people all have their own estate plans, they're totally fine with where they are. Can that be something you guys do, a trust for a house specifically?
Yeah, we do a lot. And, you talk about some of these Wisconsin homes in situations where people bought on, up in Door County or something. And when, it was barely a shed with electricity when they bought it in 1955. And, now it's worth, a couple $1 million or something like that.
Right.
That definitely needs to be put into a trust just to avoid future problems down the line.
Yeah, because that is a complicated thing. And hopefully for those of us that are lucky to still have that opportunity and have parents to do it, that it's a long time and it's not a problem for 20 or 30 more years. But, that can be an issue down the line. 847-272-7360 is how you reach John Heggie from HeggieLaw.com. Let's go to John. Oh, boy. Three Johns on all at once. I need to get John Williams and John Landecker to call in, too, and then we're in real trouble. Hello, John. How are you?
Yeah, hello.
What's your question?
I have a question. I am currently power of attorney on my aunt's taxable brokerage account. And because of that, I can maintain that for her while she's still alive. But what I did, if I can do this, I made her trust a beneficiary of the account when she passes. Is that acceptable? That way, then, the trustee would take over, and it wouldn't go through probate, and then just go to all of the beneficiaries of the trust.
So, you know, we're worried mostly about, in terms of people's estate and passing things along, three main categories. Real estate, we've already been talking about how we title real estate, what the deed says is important. And then we look at retirement assets and non-retirement assets. And specifically, if we're looking at retirement assets that are tax-deferred, you know, to encourage the growth of those assets, those we would like to avoid putting the trust as the beneficiary, because ultimately, because it's tax-deferred, that tax has to be paid. And if the trust has to pay it, they're going to pay it at a higher tax rate than the vast majority of people's individual tax rates are. Non-retirement assets, like, you know, a brokerage account, like, you know, or something like that, or even a life insurance policy, you absolutely should name the trust, and then it'll go exactly where you want it to go, because that trust isn't going to predecease the person. The trust is going to continue to exist after their death for some period of time.
So John's situation is which of the three? It's obviously not real estate. It is tax deferred.
Well, I couldn't quite understand him if he was talking about.
It's a taxable brokerage account.
Right.
That's
yeah. Perfect.
The trust
yeah.
The
name
the
trust. That's grand slam home run. That's the way to do it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
There you go. But you were saying if it's a deferred account.
Right.
Meaning that, like an IRA or something like that. That
right.
The taxes have never been paid on it. It was put in pre-tax dollars. It's grown tax-free. Someone at the end of the day is going to have to pay the tax on it. You don't want the trust to be the one paying the tax on it. The trust is worth X amount. They're in a higher tax bracket than an individual may be.
Yeah, the trust tax bracket, or you know, their percentage is the highest personal, you know, the one that applies to billionaires. So we don't want that to happen.
No,
We'd rather pay at our own personal tax rate.
Okay, sounds good. All right, 312-981-7200. If you have any last-minute questions for John Heggie, we'll take this break. Have a few more minutes with him. You can also call 847-272-7360 to reach John Heggie at Heggie Law Firm. But we have a few more minutes with him here in studio, so call us, 312-981-7200. After this. All right, 251 on here in WGN. John Heggie, you see the little volume there for you, buddy, on those headphones?
Oh, there we go.
There we go. Want to make sure we can hear the callers good. Okay, Liz, you're on WGN. You have a question for John Heggie.
I sure do. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Right to the point, I guess basically my question is how, if there's any means possible at all for me to secure my half of our childhood home that my sister, and she and I are the only remaining family members of our family. Everyone, unfortunately, is deceased.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, John. So finally, after the city has pushed my sister into action because of having neglected the property, she decided to quickly unload the property. Mm. And on the 23rd of April, we have a closing with one of those home buyers that buy the properties as is.
Right, yeah, a couple of them advertise here. Yeah, exactly.
Yep, and that's, I'm sure, where she got the phone number. So definitely April 23rd is when the closing is scheduled. And I have asked her, hey, how do you feel about the 50-50 split? Because I believe that's, of course, what our parents would want to see happen. And what I feel is, you know, my fair share. Well, I'm going to have to think about that, is her reply. And so, of course, she will admit to having a faulty memory. She's 67, and I'm not too far behind, but I think I'm probably a little more on the ball. But my question is, if she does not follow through with a fair share, in other words, should it turn into a 60-40, a 70-30?
Yeah,
well, what can I, is there anything I can do other than rely on her goodwill?
Well, let me ask John. I mean, at this point, shouldn't we know? And maybe you have a follow-up for Liz. Shouldn't this have been spelled out in some sort of will or probate or trust situation when the house passed to them, right, John?
Yeah, that seems to be the issue. How is your sister the only one on the deed?
Well, very truthfully, when our mother had to go to a long-term care facility, our attorney advised to put the house in my sister's name simply because of the look-back or whatever the law is called.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, at that point, she was not living at the home at that point. Nobody was other than my mom.
Right.
But because she was the last to leave and had lived there up until probably age 55 or so, and she was living there with my mom. So definitely the attorney advised to put the home in my sister's name.
Does that mean,
so it's,
yeah, John, does that mean that then now Liz has lost any say in what could happen to the future of the house?
Yeah.
It does?
It does. I mean, legally speaking, you know, Liz could bring an action against her sister and, you know, could maybe get her to greenmail her, you know, to pay her to go away kind of thing. But otherwise, yeah, you're pretty much at the mercy of the sister here. That doesn't sound like you got the best of legal advice.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to, that could be another Peck Ritchie call if you want to follow up. Would you say, John, if she has more details she wants to pass on?
Oh, yeah. If there's more evidence to support that.
Yeah, if you have more evidence or other things that you want to talk about, Peck Ritchie, I know you've probably heard them on John Williams. You can give him a call. And I'm sure Carrie Peck, I'm sure he'd at least tell you for sure. We don't obviously want to go into all the details here, but he'll tell you for sure whether you have a claim or not. But I'd recommend doing that, and I'm sorry you're going through that, Liz. And again, that's peckritchie.com, 312-201-0900, which I know we're giving his number out again today a lot, but he's a great guy, and he does a lot of that stuff.
Sure.
We don't have time to get Paul on the phone. Actually, Paul wants to not pass on a timeshare.
Oh.
And I just have one question for you, Paul, and then I'll try and get an answer for you. Paul, do you have any kids or no?
Yes.
Okay, he has kids. Because usually that's a guarantee that timeshare is going to go on. Have you dealt with timeshares in any way, shape, or form?
Yes. It comes up a lot. I'm always surprised by it because the idea of a timeshare scares me to death.
Some people inherited it, though, from their parents, right?
So I'm surprised to meet all these people who love them.
Yeah.
You know, you always think of it, it gets a lot of bad press, but the people do love them. So if you do want to pass that on, there is a language in the contract that says where that goes. No one ever has to inherit it if you don't want to pass it on. They can just simply say, no, thank you. You can't make someone take a... take up anything, let alone a liability.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You can't force that on them.
So what, could Paul just stop at the line there and just say, and not pass it to someone, or should he write it in as passing it to someone and they all just say no? Like, how does that...
So he's probably at some point signed it up, you know, signed the contract with the timeshare company that said, upon my passing, give it to my children, and he needs to go back and modify that. There's a way to modify it within that contract, and each contract's a little different. But
okay.
It's possible.
Okay. You can follow, Paul, you can follow up with John if you want on Monday morning. 847-272-7360. HeggyLaw.com is where people can go for more. Right, John?
That's it.
Oh, man, that hour went by fast, my friend.
It sure did.
I'm going to race you out the door because I got to go to the Blackhawks game. It'll be the Hawks at 3:30. It'll be our pregame show. 4 o'clock, it'll be a big night at the United Center, a big afternoon at that. John, take care, my friend.
You too.
All right. News coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.